welcome to Yesterday's News, the podcast that brings you the biggest stories from this week in history. I'm Joe Forrester and I'll be guiding you through the historical headlines from the earth-shattering to the absurd. And my guest this week is presenter and podcaster Marcus Bronzy.
Ow!
You can follow this show at Very Old News and please do get involved. No tweet is too trivial for our attention. On with the show. First up, we investigate the mystery of the Black Dahlia murder. Next, Marcus Bronzy chats to Henry Ford as he revolutionises industry. And finally, we look at the chilling Wannsee Conference, where top Nazis came up with a bureaucratic solution for murdering millions. First up, it's the 15th of January 1947, and you join us live from Los Angeles, where a local woman has made a shocking discovery. I'm with Betty Bersinger, who was out walking with her 3-year-old daughter when she came across the gruesome remains of 22-year-old Elizabeth Short. Betty, I'm sure this must be very difficult, but can you please tell us what you found?
I was walking from my home, which was on Norton, down to Leimert Park, which is the local shopping center there. And at that time, it was you know, about the time kids were going off to school, riding their bicycles and whatever. And I had to go by this block that was undeveloped. There were no homes built on it, and it was kind of, you know, covered with weeds and what have you. And the sidewalks were put in. So I was on the sidewalk, and there was glass and stuff strewn out because it wasn't very well maintained. And as I was walking along, I happened to glance over at my side, and I saw this strange sight. It looked like a mannequin that had been cut in half and was separated and was lying there. And I didn't glance at it too long because I had my little girl with me, and I thought, gosh, as I walked on further, I thought, you know, that just didn't seem right to me. And I thought, I could see these kids with their bicycles. And I said, maybe it'll scare those kids if they ride to school and see this, so I better, call somebody to come and at least have a look and see what it is. But the thought of a dead person did not enter my mind. I thought it was a mannequin because it was so white. So I stopped at one house. When I crossed, got through the block and got to the next block, there were homes built on that block. I went to the first home, and there was nobody there. So then I went to the next house. Now, it might have been the first house, but anyhow, the first or second house, I rang the doorbell, and a woman came to the door, and I told her, I said, you know, I said, I saw something strange up the street, and I said, I just think I ought to call somebody and have them come and look at it, you know. The further I walked away from them, the further I thought, well, gee, I wonder if it could be something, you know, more than just a mannequin. It just didn't seem to me that made much sense. So anyhow, I thought, I better call and tell the police and at least have them come out and check it. And so she said, well, yes, use the phone. So I called them, and somebody answered from the police station, and I told them what had happened, that I'd seen this, and I said, I thought somebody ought to come out, you know, and check it out.
The murder of Elizabeth Short remains the most compelling unsolved crime in Hollywood history, and has spawned several book and film adaptations. Betty Bersinger discovered Short's body, which had been cut in half and appeared to have been drained of blood, and the murderer had also cut 3-inch gashes into each corner of her mouth, creating a gruesome smile. The crime created a frenzy as the police and the press both launched investigations, but the crime remained unsolved. However, last year, retired LAPD Detective Steve Hodel claimed to have found evidence that his father, the late Dr. George Hodel, was the killer. While looking around his own childhood home, Steve uncovered pictures in a family photo album of a woman who looked very like Elizabeth Short. He then began to wonder about his father's possible involvement, and upon bringing in a police sniffer dog, located places in the basement that even after half a century had traces of human remains. Upon checking the dates of the Short murder, Steve realised that his father had been alone in the house as the rest of the family was away, and hypothesised that he had killed Short during this time. Steve has also come to believe his father may have murdered many other women. During the press coverage, many stories emerged about Short, including that she was a prostitute, which was simply untrue, and many high-profile suspects were put in the spotlight, including gangster Bugsy Siegel. Whatever the real story behind this Hollywood mystery, the fact remains that a young girl lost her life in horrific circumstances. Next up is the 14th of January 1914, and Marcus Bronzi is joined by car manufacturer and industrialist Henry Ford at his Detroit plant, as he's made a bold leap forward in making the motor car affordable for everybody. Marcus.
Thanks, Joe. That's right, I'm here with Mr. Henry Ford. Mr. Ford, can you tell us what's happening here today?
Well, sure. Today we've perfected our production line for my Model T car, meaning we have cut our production times for creating one car from 12 and a half hours to just 93 minutes.
Jeez, this will rapidly increase your productivity, won't it?
I realize that if I could save every one of my workers 50 steps a day, I could save miles by the end of a year. We can now make 1,000 Model Ts an hour, not 100 as before.
Shucks, gee whiz, that's a huge increase, sir. You mentioned your workers there. What does that mean for them?
It means not only am I paying my workers more, they're working fewer hours, and I've been able to drop the price of my Model T from $850 to $260, meaning the guys who make them can afford to buy them.
Mr. Ford, thank you. Back to you, Joe.
Thanks, Marcus. Yep, Ford's production line revolutionized industry. He was not the first person to create a production line, but streamlined the process, creating a moving assembly line operated with pulleys and standardizing parts so they all fitted together easily and less skill was involved. Ford famously said the Model T was available in any color the customer wanted, as long as it was black. This meant it was quicker and cheaper to make cars, and to reduce high staff turnover due to the monotonous nature of the work, he paid his employees more, thus stimulating the economy. This process was soon adopted by most industry and led to the creation of a large urban population, much of them working in unskilled factory jobs. Ford's Detroit factory was a marvel of the age, with trains rolling right into it delivering parts, cranes winching those parts through gaps in the ceiling, and conveyor belts carrying them around the factory. A bit like Willy Wonka's chocolate factory, but with a much higher chance of lung disease. Ford far outstripped the competition, with his 13,000 workers building around 300,000 cars a year, which was more than his nearly 300 competitors combined, who had a total workforce of over 66,000. As the motor car became more affordable, Americans became able to move around more easily, and their industry became more efficient. Henry Ford's system of pulleys and conveyor belts in large part led to the modern industrial world we know today. And finally, it's the 20th of January 1942, and at an imposing villa overlooking a lake outside Berlin, leading Nazis are discussing what they euphemistically call a final solution to the Jewish question. What they actually mean is they're trying to decide how best to eradicate the Jews of Europe. Present is Reinhard Heydrich, the second most powerful man in the SS, standing at 6'2" tall with blonde hair, blue eyes, and an utter callous devotion to the warped ideology of National Socialism. Heydrich is the poster boy for the type of man Hitler sees populating his perfect society. He is also known as the Hangman of Prague for his brutal repression of Czech resistance. Also there is Adolf Eichmann, smaller, demure, and ostensibly a typical bureaucrat. However, Eichmann killed millions more with pen and paper than Heydrich ever did with gun or noose. Eichmann was later known as the architect of the final solution. They're joined by 15 other men, leading Nazis, industrialists, people representing transport, and there is one issue at hand, how to get the Jews out of Europe. Some propose deportation to the island of Madagascar, others believe mass sterilisation is the answer. Heydrich himself suggests sending them all to Poland and working them to death, however this is considered impractical. What about those who don't die quickly enough? What would we do with them? The plan settled on is not deportation or forced labour, but extermination. Jews will be put into specially modified vans, a canister of lethal Zyklon B poison emptied into it through a hole in the roof, and the people inside will be killed, as the Zyklon B crystals give off a gas. A few months later, these vans were killing 1,000 people a day in Chelmno, Poland. However, this was deemed too slow, and the process was industrialised, with special extermination camps being constructed in the east. This is where we get the famous image of the Nazi death camp. Jews would be told they were being sent for resettlement in the East, even shown propaganda videos suggesting their lives would be greatly improved. They would then be crammed into railway cars designed for cattle, many died en route, before arriving at a camp where an SS doctor would put them into one of two groups. The first group would be told they were fit to work, the second would be told they had lice and would need to be decontaminated before they could work, so were sent to the shower block. After being stripped naked, they were herded into the shower facility, which was pitch black. After a few moments, a grate in the roof was unscrewed and Zyklon B poured in. It would take up to 15 minutes for the screaming to stop. There are reports from SS men that when the chamber was opened, the bodies were piled in a pyramid, as the dying had scrambled on top of one another to try and reach air. The bodies were then burned. While history is littered with examples of genocide, the Holocaust remains the most shocking. It's not just the scale. 6 million Jews, each with a family, friends, a job, a home, passions, hopes, dreams, and aspirations, had their lives extinguished due to the racial mania of one man and those around him, although thousands more were of course complicit. It is also the mechanised nature of this mass murder that's so chilling. Upon witnessing a massacre in Minsk, Belarus in August 1941, where the victims were shot, head of the SS Heinrich Himmler concluded the process to be too slow, and that it was having a negative impact on the morale of the men required to shoot hundreds of human beings a day. Earlier that same year, it was Hitler himself who ordered a more permanent and efficient resolution, ordering Hermann Göring to write to Reinhard Heydrich to create, as soon as possible, a general plan of the administrative material and financial measures necessary for carrying out the desired final solution of the Jewish question. The Wannsee Conference was the result of this, where a small group of men sat around a table in a picturesque lake house and discussed how best to murder several million people. Reinhard Heydrich was killed by Czech freedom fighters in 1943, and Adolf Eichmann was hanged in Israel in 1962 after being snatched by Israeli special forces in South America and smuggled out to stand trial for his crimes. However, this is scant payment for the misery they inflicted on millions. That's it for this week. Thanks for listening. Remember, you can follow the podcast on Twitter at Very Old News. Please do get in touch. Thank you to my guest, Marcus Bronzy, and I will see you next week.